Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
So I take a moment today to watch, for no apparent reason, Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook testify in Capitol Hill. And Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa asked the opening couple of questions. And then next up would be the ranking member on the Democratic side, which is Senator Bill Nelson of Florida. And Senator Nelson brings up a topic I guess he brought up yesterday to Sheryl Sandberg about if I happen to be on Facebook and I happen to mention in a chat with somebody about some particular chocolate he likes, that suddenly, out of nowhere, on his Facebook page, on ads, chocolate starts showing up left and right. He says, what if I don't want chocolate? He says, you know, I'm going to have to... He said it was suggested maybe I would have to pay to block the ads. Well, as you know, Sean, what's the first thing I thought of when I saw this happening?
Our colleague that's in charge of digital
exactly.
media.
Exactly. After Zuckerberg is over with, I'm telling you, they're calling the suit down to D.C. to talk about digital media.
Next man up.
Next man. It's the suit. All I can think of is he's going to be down there, and he's going to try and talk IndyCar with these people. And they're going to look at him like he's from Mars. Unbelievable.
You got to time that topic right. You got to stay in your lane.
Oh. Now you
wait,
just
IndyCar. Wait, IndyCar lane. I didn't even think about that when I before I said it.
So. Oh my goodness. I'm listening to this testimony. First thing I'm thinking of is like, wait a minute, we got the principal perpetrator right here in our own backyard.
Excuse me, we have a man here to break it all down for you. That a 4-year-old can understand.
And when we get to the fourth hole at Susquehanna Valley Country Club, right, I'm always tempted to walk over to the Dunkin' Donuts.
Not far away.
No, it's right there.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you know, kind of get maybe a little something for, you know, keep going in the on the course.
Sure.
I'm a big Dunkin' fan anyway.
Me too.
And we were out there last year, and the suit's explaining how, like, that would show up on my phone. Like, I said, look, take your invasion of privacy to the fifth hole, okay? I said, we're playing four here. Oh, no, it really helps. I said, no, it helps you. I said, let's be straight here. Who does it really help? Oh, wait a minute, it helps you. I'm smart enough to go online if I want and find the Dunkin' app all by myself.
Hey, we're back at the club 3 weeks from tomorrow. It's getting closer.
I know.
Can't wait.
I'm really looking forward to it. Really looking forward to it.
570-286-5636. You can call the Greater Susquehanna Valley YMCA. Get your foursome locked in for what will be a great day at the Truman H. Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament, Susquehanna Valley Country Club. We'll stay and do the show. Why not, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
The Greater Susquehanna Valley YMCA, by the way, is going to be the beneficiary of all this. It should be. They do great work.
Talk to Ron Marshall this afternoon from the Milton Y. He is pumped up, too.
Should be. I mean, it's a great fundraiser. Great fundraiser. And we're looking forward again to being a part of it on Wednesday, May 2nd. I actually got out and played on Saturday. It's 36 degrees. 36 degrees. And I'm out there, and I've got three, you know, jackets on. I'm not wearing a winter coat. I've got three jackets on, enough where I can swing a club. And feet were fine. Upper body was fine. But, wow. what my hand started to get. You know, even the hand that had the glove on it, it was that started losing a little feeling there after a while. I only played 9 holes. I did okay. I shot 42. Kind of did the Patrick Reed style where there were a few one putts in there to get to 42 for 9 holes. Actually, a pretty good score.
Yeah, but you're much nicer to the gallery when you walk off the greens.
Oh no! It's I'll go over and talk and laugh and have a good time with people like I always do. But you know, as opposed to Patrick the Suit Reed, I mean, you and I both know. I mean, the suit gets out there and he gets locked in on what he's doing. And he doesn't communicate with anybody, right? And does he ever help you find your ball? No. Are you expected to find his ball? Yes.
I have to remember this when he tees off. When he tees off at our first hole, Captain America, let's go.
like take the chief. Now, his chief, of course, we'll all we don't have to often look for the chief or Craig's ball, but everybody hits an errant shot, so we're always looking for each other's golf balls whenever we're out there. He won't help look. I'm talking about won't help look. Now, if he needs help,
we'll help here.
Okay, we'll help here.
Hey, hello. Yeah, I'm on an island.
Here, why don't you drop one and hit a chutter?
I had to email him an hour ago. I had to send him some information about something else, and I signed it. Leave the chutter at home.
Oh, that thing's got to go. It's got to go. Oh, mercy me. Okay. But I'm watching Zuckerberg. It's the first thing I thought of. Bill Nelson's describing exactly what our guy does. Captain Invasion of Privacy. But if you want to find out where he went on his vacation,
what? None of your business. What's that? What?
His entire spiel sales-wise is about invasion of privacy. But you try to ask him where he went. Oh, no, the walls go up. All right. A couple notes for you. Jim Larrañaga at Miami had his contract extended through 2024. Mike Bray had his contract extended through 2025. I personally like Mike Bray. Every time I talk to him, he is as straight a shooter as there is on the planet. I mean, when you get an answer from Mike, you get what he believes is the honest answer. There is no getting around it. Mikal Bridges leaving Villanova to enter the NBA draft. And then there's Lamar Stevens making his announcement yesterday. He's returning for his junior year to Penn State. You know, I really felt what was strange about that was how that announcement was met. People are, he just wants to feel important. I had a couple of people at Channel 3 today were talking. What did he do that for? I said to let everybody know that he's coming back to Penn State, that he's not going to enter the draft, he's not going to turn pro, he's not going to get an agent. Oh, and by the way, here's the most important part to me, he's also has no intention of transferring, so... Because believe me, if he decided to transfer, the line would be from here to Philly. There aren't many 1,000-point scorers out there after your sophomore season. He's one of them. I said, so he did all of that because, number one, it was important to make sure everybody knew exactly where he stood, okay? There is no such thing as too much information. All right, no such thing, especially in something like this, where there's no, now everybody knows exactly where he stands. Didn't keep it a mystery, didn't keep it to himself, Patrick already knew about it, the rest of us around it already knew about it, but, as I said to somebody today, I said, what's the difference between Tommy Stevens saying it and Lamar Stevens saying it? What's the difference? Because you feared that Tommy Stevens might go, and you didn't fear Lamar Stevens would go? There's no difference. They both said they're staying. And it's good news for each program. Just because you make an assumption about one, I mean, because when it comes to transfers, people who make predictions on these things do not have a very good track record. How many times was Christian Hackenberg going to transfer? Mike Watkins is entering the NBA draft. Tommy Stevens is leaving. No, Mike Watkins is staying. Tommy Stevens is staying. Right? So it's not a very good track record about people who, quote, think they know what people are going to do. Well, this guy comes out and makes a blunt statement that's great for the Penn State basketball program. Makes it clear in no uncertain terms because, as one of the leaders of the team, it's important for him to make clear in no uncertain terms what's going on. That way, there's no mystery to it. There's no mystery. I just kind of thought it was odd the way people, they rejoiced and jumped up and down when Tommy decided, to tell everybody, hey, look, I'm not going anywhere. I'm staying. Right. And then Lamar does it. Like, what do you do that for? Well, I don't know. There aren't that many 1,000-point scorers out there. Okay. That are sophomores. Yeah, I think people have got to start understanding the kind of talent Penn State has. Hey, this was the single most talented Penn State basketball team I've ever seen assembled. Now, are they the best that I've seen in 36 years? Now, we can start debating best. But in terms of talent, the most talented Penn State basketball team I've ever seen assembled. Lamar Stevens is a big reason for that. And that is a big plus for the program. In fact, I don't think it would hurt, even though everyone knows he's staying, but it wouldn't hurt Josh Reeves just came out and said, hey, look, I'm staying too. Just to kind of make sure everybody understands where everybody stands. Because in college basketball, it's a different ballgame. Hey, it seems that, for the most part, fans have a very good handle on how football works. I think, for the most part, fans have a pretty good handle on how wrestling works. There aren't a lot of people that have a good handle on how basketball works. I mean, it's sometimes sitting in this seat, I always have to remember that we have to remember it's... So you have to explain how the NBA draft works. You have to explain how the combine process works. You have to explain how the early entry works. You have to explain about when you can take your name out of it and how that works. You have to explain about the number of transfers out there. College basketball, men's basketball, has had 1,500 players transfer in the last 2 years. 2 years ago, it was in the neighborhood of 800. Last year, it was in the neighborhood of 700. 1,500 players. So when you're talking about, on an average, of 750 players transferring, think about the percentages of that. There are 4,500 Division I basketball players. 750 on the average are transferring at the end of the year. That's nearly... One in five, let's be conservative. That's about one in six. One in six college basketball players transfer every year. And the percentage is even higher than that because, remember, of those 4,500 players, how many are seniors that were leaving anyway? So it's an actually higher percentage than that. So say each team has... Let's be really conservative. Penn State had two seniors this year. So let's say all 351 have two seniors. All right? Well, now you're talking about 750 seniors there. So lop that off 4,500, and now you're down to, 3,750, 750. Now you're talking about one in every five basketball players scheduled to return for next year, one in five transfer. So sometimes you have to explain for some reason. I mean, I know more explanation sometimes is needed in this area than maybe in other areas. I mean, if I'm in Connecticut right now or if I'm in Kentucky right now, I don't know how to explain any of this. But you have to do maybe a little bit more so because there are a lot of people really in tune with football. They're really in tune with wrestling, not so much in tune with basketball. That's why the Rice Commission coming out 2 weeks from tomorrow is going to be really important moving forward. All right, we will come back with more in a moment, brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We're the home of the king of digital media as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, great to have you with us. I believe after Zuckerberg is done, I believe the suit is next. They want to get to somebody who has a real handle on digital media. Yeah. No?
Maybe.
Are you telling me that you don't think he's a player? He keeps telling us he's a player. Now, in the sports we compete in, he's not, but I mean...
He was supposed to be part of that today, but then he said he was in meetings all day, so he was too busy.
Yeah, he's texting Zuckerberg.
That's saying something. If he has the Z-Man's number, that's pretty big.
Yeah,
that's a huge addition to the Rolodex.
Yeah, no, it is huge. Doesn't mean Zuckerberg calls him back.
That's true. That's true.
All right, just so you know.
Two-way street. Works both ways.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as you know, I don't use Facebook. We have a Facebook page. And so anything that is posted on the Facebook page is automatically transferred to me. I see it. So whenever we get somebody who likes, and we had somebody else who gave us a like yesterday, or somebody has a question, you get it to me right away. So I do see everything. Now, it's probably frustrating to the world that I don't post on it. But I've talked about this many times, like the Twitter account. All right, let's be honest about it. All right, so everybody understands. Everything that's put on the Twitter account is put on by Sean. All right. And same thing with Facebook. Anything that's put on there is put on by Sean. But anything that you as a fan put on Facebook, I do get. And if you notice, I respond to all of it. If you were to send something to me on Twitter, Sean would make sure I saw it. And I'd respond to it. If you want to send something on Facebook, Sean gets it. I think it automatically comes up on my email, doesn't it? I think so.
I believe it does. Same with Twitter. Follower, yeah, you'll get that info by email,
yeah,
too.
I automatically get all that stuff. So that's why you notice I answer questions off of Facebook, because it's automatically transferred to me. But I don't post on it. I never have. There's several reasons why. I've always felt that it was important to make this show, and then where you take care of business here in this forum, because I think that's what I'm paid to do. But that's a tool to use to get questions or comments here. For example, Troy last week, he posted a couple things on Facebook that we talked about right away. The other part, too, is I don't have a lot of time.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for this day in sports history. Then we're going to talk a little bit about Gabe Kapler. He's become an interesting individual. 1916, the PGA held its first championship tournament. Now, notice it's April 10th. Now, the PGA next year is going to be moving into the Mother's Day weekend slot, and the Players is going to March. The other thing will do a world of good for the PGA Championship to get that second spot. 1947, the Brooklyn Dodgers president Branch Rickey announced that he had purchased the contract of Jackie Robinson from the Montreal Royals. Robinson, of course, on the 15th of April, 1947, became the first African-American player to play in the big leagues. Last year, we had the privilege of having Ed Henry on from Fox News. His book, 42 Faith, outstanding, and is still obviously available in bookstores. That was a great... Ed could not have been a better guest.
Believe it or not, that was April 10th, 2017. That was a year ago today.
Yeah.
Or was it April 12th? Maybe it was April the 12th. But it was definitely this week last year.
Right. Yeah. Well, it was, because I remember I made a big deal in the intro about this being the 70th anniversary before the week was up. 1961, Gary Player of South Africa became the first foreign golfer to win the Masters. He ended up winning three green jackets in his career among the nine majors he won. President John F. Kennedy threw out the first pitch at Griffith Stadium this day in 1961. The Senators lost to the White Sox 4-3. Now, that was the expansion Senators, who are now the Texas Rangers. Before that, the previous version of the Washington Senators ended up in Minnesota's the Twins. 2000, Ken Griffey Jr. became the youngest player in baseball to reach 400 home runs, 30 years, 141 days old. If he had not continued to run into walls, because he was an all-effort guy, and I say that out of admiration. You know how much I appreciate athletes that do not take their talent for granted. Ken Griffey Jr. was one of them. And I think if he'd stayed healthy the entire time, which is hard to do for anybody, I think he would have had more home runs than Barry Bonds. Still ended up with over 600. But he lost a lot of time. All right, Gabe Kapler. As a kid, did you play Stratomatic or Appa?
I did not.
Stratomatic and Appa, two games where you use dice. I had Appa, which, by the way, was manufactured out of Lancaster. And
you said Stratomatic for a second there. I thought you were describing a mattress.
No. Stratomatic was a baseball game where you use dice. Same thing with Appa, same concept. Roll the dice. And this is really years ahead of their time, because what they did was they used their version of analytics on those cards with dice combinations as to what the play would be, that if you were to play 162 games, you'd be startled. Now, I never played 162 games. You'd be startled at, holy cow, how close it was to their numbers the year before. And that's what they did, analytics. I mean, they were using analytics long before analytics were being used to try and give a statistical accuracy to each player. Now, what I did was I made up all-star teams, like four all-star teams, and take the cards. And so, you know, I played like 20 games in the cards or whatever. And that, I mean, that's how I did it. Now, of course, we have everything from wins above replacement. All right. Why does Chris Bryant hit second in the lineup? I'm still not enamored with that stuff. Chris Bryant drove in 100 runs in each of his first 2 years. They hit him second last year. He drove in 73. Don't you want one of your RBI guys like hitting an RBI with whatever? I'm not going to. Okay. And then there's Gabe Kapler. So this is an article that was written on CBSSports.com by, my apologies here, Tom Frinelli, who does very good work. And he loves and played as a kid Stratomatic baseball. In fact, he made up his own version of it. It says, Gabe Kapler's only managed 8 games, but he's caught a lot of awkward glances from the baseball world as well as players in his clubhouse in that time. Not just from those who have read about some of his, shall we say, interesting uses of coconut oil. The impetus for these glances is Kapler's strict adherence to the numbers in his managerial practices. He's a man that believes analytics and data are useful, and he's putting a lot of theories to the test from the jump. Now, there's nothing wrong with that, all right, per se. But as you know, I think analytics are extremely, extremely useful as a guide. And I think a lot of times analytics can maybe send you in a little different direction. They can also confirm or deny what is going on out there. In the first three games as manager, we saw Kapler pull his opening day starter, Aaron Nola, after only 68 pitches, even though he was cruising. The reasoning being that hitters fare better against starting pitchers the third time through the order. Well, it didn't matter that day as the bullpen blew the game. He also benched Odubel Herrera on opening day for what he said were matchup reasons. One of those matchup reasons was that Nola, whom he pulled early, had a high ground ball rate and Herrera's defense in center wasn't as valuable. As he points out, he pulled Nola, though, at this point. Okay, wait a minute. Kapler also had, of course, the embarrassing moment of going to the mound to make a pitching change, only to discover that there's nobody warming up. Okay, it's not only the media or the fans bothered by all this. One anonymous Phillies player told FanRag Sports' John Heyman that the Phillies would be okay if the manager would just get out of the way. Well, outfielder Nick Williams went on record to complain about his playing time, saying the computers are making the decisions. Now, had the Phillies been winning these games, odds are, and Tom's right, that odds are there wouldn't be so many people noticing Kapler's decisions. But if that were the case, I'd be rooting even harder against Kapler. This is Tom's opinion. It has nothing to do with him or the Phillies. I'm just against the idea of stats dictating the entire game. Now, I'm with him on that. I think one of the keys to managing or coaching, you have to have gut instinct. Now, you may have prepared for that moment. All right? We'll take, for example, the two-minute drill drive at Iowa by Penn State. You know how many times they practiced that? They practiced it yesterday. As a matter of fact, 2 minute, 4 minute, whatever they want to term it at that time. But that was practiced over and over again. And you saw the competency with which Trace McSorley ran that drive. Penn State basketball, right? Final, the winning dunk by Josh Reeves. They had worked on that and worked on that as a play that they wanted to run at a specific point and call near the end of a game or the half. And so when it came time, Pat made the call, and no timeout was needed, made the call from the bench, they ran it and got a slam dunk. I mean, that's because they probably had the shot that put away the Temple game. Five times in shoot-around, Pat worked on that play with his players just to make sure they had it down. He said, we might need this one tonight at a critical moment. Well, they did, and they made it. So you work on that stuff because your gut tells you when you might need something. Now, numbers may help you make the decision, but it still has to be your decision. So he writes on CBSSports.com, we see it all the time in sports, not just baseball. A team finds success doing something new, and then everybody else tries to mimic that success. That's true. Look at how infield shifts have evolved in Major League Baseball in recent years and how important catcher framing has become to teams. Those are examples. And surely, if Gabe Kapler and the Phillies start winning a bunch of games using baseball reference and fan graphics to manage their decisions, others are going to follow suit. Fornelli writes, quote, and I will hate it. He writes, as much as I love stats and nerding out over baseball, the fact remains that this is still a sport played by human beings, and some parts of the game cannot be quantified. Thankfully, we're seeing signs that Kapler is beginning to realize this. He's already said that his bullpen usage will change going forward. Hopefully he'll adapt in other ways as well, because to run a team based on nothing but analytical data would remove the human element from the game, and at that point, it's not a game anymore, it's simulation. Now, what are the Phillies right now? Are they playing what it's going to be, what, their ninth or tenth game?
They are currently 4-5.
4-5, so they're going to play the tenth game coming up.
Won three of their last four.
He's nine games in. As I said, I want to see what he's doing by the time we get to June in this whole thing. You know, what's he doing?
Well, it wasn't in last night's game, but going back to Sunday's game, you mentioned about, you know, Tom Fernelli mentioned about shifts. And yeah, there was a scenario in the Mets series where Gabe made the wrong call on a shift. Well, the same thing happened on Sunday. There was a shift with a runner on first, and it kept the Phillies from turning two, and right. That set the tone for a three-run inning. But then there was later in the game on Sunday, I believe it was in the eighth inning, the score was tied at three, and it was a time when Gabe had to make a decision whether to intentionally walk Brian Anderson. Well, he made the wrong call, and then Anderson, what's he do? You know, hits a home run to right center, and it turns out it was the winning runs in the game. I mean, is that a coin flip? Is that something, like you said, if they keep on winning, this could be something that, I just wonder if little things like that, it's going to get to the point where the fans are looking for another reason to boo him when he goes out to the mound for another pitching change.
It's more magnified when you make a move, no matter what the move is. I mean, Grady Little 2003. Okay, keeps Pedro Martinez in the game, right? Now, that was a gut move. That was not an analytics move. Was it the right move? No, the Yankees made him pay, and it turned out it was not the right move. But Grady Little was making the move that he thought was the best move at the moment. So even gut moves don't pan out either. And we've talked about sometimes, and I've been blunt about this several times, saying, hey, look, you know, they made a move here, they tried to do this, and it didn't work, but you know what? I'd have done the same thing. Because I thought it was the right thing to do at that particular time. I don't care if it's baseball, football, or basketball. I mean, I announce almost 100 games a year. So you talk about different moves they make. You know, now, the ones that you enjoy talking about are the ones that work. But that, you know, let me give you an example. James, was it the first year? They're playing Maryland. And they're backed up at their own end. The right move is to punt and put it on your defense to try and win the game. Well, it turned out that, like, if I'm in that spot, I punt. Because that is the right move to make at that point. I feel I have better odds of winning with my defense on the field than trying at that point with my offense to get a first down. Well, it turned out it's a lousy punt. And Maryland only needed one first down to be in field goal range for Brad Craddock, who at that point was one of the top kickers in college football, and he knocked it home. Now, is it easy to criticize James Franklin for punting in that spot? Oh, they didn't get it done. You know, it wasn't a good call. I should have gone for it, blah, blah, blah. Well, it's easy to second guess any of that stuff, but I would have made the exact same decision in that spot. That was a rock solid football decision. It turned out it didn't work out. Okay. So that happens. Now, I can go through a long list of decisions he's made there where it did work out. So, you know, same thing with Patrick. I mean, people talk about him as a bench coach. I can give you a list of things like, oh, nah, not so sure Pat should have done that. I can also give you a long list of things like, hey, great call. Remember the big deal I made up when they went to quarters in the NIT? I said one of the keys will be is how do you handle the end of each quarter? Right, it's very important in the NBA, and it's very important in basketball. Because if you handle the end of the quarter correctly, if you can get some two-for-ones, or you can get what I refer to two-for-nones, where it turns out I'm getting the last possession of the quarter, oh, and because of the alternate possession, I'm getting the ball to start the second quarter, that's what I refer to as a two-for-none. Well, look at the NIT championship game. Do you realize that Penn State scored to end the first quarter, end the second quarter, and end the third quarter? Each one. Two of them were right at the buzzer. Now, is that praised and so forth? No. Nobody even noticed it, for goodness sakes. Nobody even noticed it. Right? Because it's not as much fun to praise coaching. It's much more fun to be negative about it, and it's far more enjoyable to do shows where you talk about people being fired. But those are moves you make. So back to Gabe Kapler. I want to see a body of work because, I mean, here's one of the issues I have with what they're doing with managers these days. Let's take Gabe Kapler and Aaron Boone. These are two guys I haven't managed. Right? This is all being done learning on the job. Aaron Boone's never managed a game in his life. That's what's so interesting about this. You got a lot of people who have worked hard, worked their way through systems and so forth. And look, in the minor leagues, it's a little bit different in the minor leagues than the lower levels because you have such a mandate on development. Ollie Marmol, who's now the first base coach for the St. Louis Cardinals, when Ollie was here, I talked to him about it. He said, when do you mentally kick yourself into gear? Like, okay, the heck with what? You know, like the organization said, you got to start X, Y, and Z tonight because we need to see something from them. Because you're trying to develop players. So it's the right thing for the Cardinals to do. And Ollie, of course, gets it and he understands it. And he does it. He said, well, right around the sixth inning, seventh inning, he says, I then kick it into a managerial spot where now it's let's win the game. And you could see, like, the wheels turn with him. Joe Cruz was the same way. You see that with Pat Borders up at Williamsport. The wheels turn starting around the sixth or seventh inning. Yeah, I've done the development part. Now let's go win the game. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
We upgrade all the time.
My computer.
My TV.
My phone.
Isn't it time you upgraded your vehicle? Upgrade your trade now at Sunbury Motors Kia.
I wanna see you in Kia.
It's the first annual Upgrade Your Trade event. Now is the time because SMC is making it easier than ever with above market value for your trade and 0% financing for up to 75 months on 2018 Kia Fortes, Optimus, Sportages, and Serenos. 0% for 66 months on 2018 Kia Souls and Sedonas. And 0% for 60 months on 2018 Kia Rios and Niros. And all include Kia's 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty. Plus, there's over 25 Kia certified pre-owned vehicles on the lot, priced to move. It's the first annual Upgrade Your Trade event at Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Financing offers available to qualified buyers through KMF Financing. In lieu of rebate, excludes Kia Stinger and Cadenza. Warranty is a limited powertrain warranty. For details, see Taylor or go to Kia.com.
Hey, Gabe Kapler managed 1 year in the minors, but that was 2007. With the Greenville Drive and the Red Sox organization, the Sally League. And he came back to the majors and he played three more years after that. But that's his only managerial experience. And that was 2007, 11 years ago. He wasn't using, for example, he wasn't using analytics back then or anything like that. So, look, you have a manager that's learning on the job. You know, the Yankees have a manager who's learning on the job. And that's not the best way to do it. But let's see if he grows into the job. Making an evaluation after nine games. Well, first of all, it is proper to make an evaluation after each game. Why do you take Aaron Nola out, 68 pitches? And again, you can get so married to something, well, you know, third time through the order. Oh, for crying out loud. Maybe it's a day that they can't touch him no matter what. You know, part of the job, too, of the starter these days is to make sure that the bullpen doesn't get overextended. The one person that should be extended on that day is the starter. Well, now you've wasted valuable innings from the bullpen that maybe in July you might need. And so, I mean, those are the moves like that where you get so married to it, and you say, yeah, I know what I'm doing. Look, part of being a manager, a player, a broadcaster, you have to have some instinct about it. You have to have your own gut tell you where you're going. Analytics doesn't do that.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.